Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Good evening and welcome to Amplify, a telephone talk show that looks at life from a religious perspective. I'm Father Ron Lingwin, hoping you have felt the warmth of God's love in your life this day, how much we need that, especially the joy you feel when you share that love with others. As we do each week, I'd like to begin a program with a story that is based on faith, informed with imagination. Jesus was speaking to a group of young men when one of them asked him, "Master, what is the purpose of the body? Why should it be respected?" Jesus looked straight into his eyes and answered, "The body is a temple, a gift from the Father. It is unblemished and filled with great love when he gives it." "Unblemished?" the young man said in disbelief, and they all looked at one another. Jesus replied, "Maybe it does not appear that way in your eyes, but in the eyes of God our Father, again I repeat, the body is a gift. It is like the gift of rare flowers, each different, each unique, and yet each so much alike." The young men looked at one another again, and some of them began to laugh. Jesus asked them, "Why do you mock me?" One of them thought for a while before responding, "Master, I respect you, but I do not agree with what you said." Jesus urged him to continue speaking. "You said the body is like a temple and beautiful, like a rare flower. I believe that's what you said. What then are the bodies of beggars, prostitutes, and shepherds? Do you consider them to be beautiful?" Again, the young men laughed at his question. Jesus answered now with anger in his voice, "I have already told you, and I tell you once again, the Father does not create ugliness. Only man does that when he creates sinful thoughts, when he abuses the body, when he disrespects life in any form, when he embraces darkness and shields himself from the light. In our tradition, we are told to wash our hands before we touch the food. When a guest enters our home, do we not wash his feet? This is a way of showing respect to our earthly body. But man must also cleanse his heart and his mind. Only he can do this. Your neighbor may wash your feet and give you clean clothes, but only you can clean your heart and your mind. Woe to the man who refuses to see the love the Father has given to us. Look around at the earth, the sea, in the sky. What is produced in the earth needs sun and water to flourish it. In the same way, man needs the words of the Father so that he may grow and continually give God's gift of love to the world." Patricia Cooney Hathaway has edited a book titled Sex and the Spiritual Life, Reclaiming Integrity, Wholeness, and Intimacy. 10 authors have contributed to the book. Patricia writes in the introduction to her book, "The word sex has a Latin root from the verb sicare, which means literally to cut off, to sever, to disconnect from the whole. Many people were surprised by the negative connotation, yet does it not express our experience of life? We are pushed out of the warm, nurturing womb of our mothers into a world that will often be experienced, even in the best of circumstances, as arbitrary, inhospitable, or not necessarily committed to our well-being. Feeling incomplete or disconnected, we often search out relationships that will make us feel connected, secure, and whole. Unfortunately, the term sexuality, as commonly used today, does not reflect its original meaning. On the contrary, it only carries the very narrow connotation of having sex. For the purposes of this book, we prefer a broader meaning. Sexuality is our way of being in the world as gendered persons. It includes our self-understanding as male or female, our body feelings, and our attitudes. Most important, sexuality refers to an all-encompassing energy inside us, the drive for love, community, friendship, femininity, affection, wholeness, joy, delight, self-transcendence. Sexuality, thus, is a deep human energy driving us toward bonding and compassion. Without it, life would be cold and metallic, even in its distorted and destructive expressions. Sexuality betrays this fundamental longing. It is God-given for no less than that." We're pleased to have one of the participants in this book as our guest this evening. She's been a guest on Amplify for decades, as I'll point out in just a second. A little more specifically, Dr. Susan Mudo is co-founder with Father Adrian Von Kalm of the Epiphany Association and dean of the Epiphany Academy of Formative Spirituality here in Pittsburgh. She has lectured all over the world and written more than 40 books on the spiritual life, many of them co-authored with her friend and mentor, Father Adrian, who went to his reward in 2007. Her latest work, A Feast for Hungry Souls, which we previously discussed the last time she was here, is the culmination of a long love affair with the masters and mystics of the Christian tradition. And in the fifth chapter of this book, she explores the calling God placed upon her life, as well as the blessings and challenges of her chosen path as a single woman in the church. In this particular book, the title of her chapter is Sexuality, Spirituality, and the Single Life. Dr. Susan Mudo, welcome to Amplify.
Thank you, Father Ron. I'm delighted to return to, as you said, a long-standing relationship with you on this program.
It goes a long time. In fact, you had helped me with a couple of your earlier books that we had interviews with. Years ago, on January 23rd of 1983, 38 years ago, we talked about, I think it was your first book, Celebrating the Single Life.
Yes, that was the original edition of Celebrating the Single Life.
And then another one in what we're talking about a little bit tonight is Commitment, Key to Christian Maturity.
Maturity.
Mm-hmm. Right. Tell us what it was like as you begin your chapter growing up as a Roman Catholic woman in an Italian-American family in the 1950s. Because I'm older than you. We grew up in the same community, and I know
a little bit
about it. Not Italian, but nevertheless, Beachview was largely Italian.
Well, of course, wonderful memories of great meals and family gatherings and all kinds of good, hard-working people celebrating Mass every Sunday at the then St. Catherine of Siena Church. So I would have to say that it was a close-knit neighborhood at that time, and indeed, ethnically speaking, primarily Italian-American. That has altered in our own recent times, much more Mexican-American. But the point is, at that time, we really emphasized family life. I mean, family life was the center of social life. It was the center of holidays and celebrations. And I mention that because it was assumed that a young woman like myself would probably find a wonderful husband and mm-hmm. have a family and raise children. That was the assumption. And so it was quite difficult, I think, at the beginning for certainly my parents to even explore the possibility that their one and only daughter, I'm the one daughter with two brothers, could possibly deviate from that tradition. It was a very powerful tradition in general in our world, but very strong in the Italian-American upbringing. But somehow, somewhere, the sense overtook me more than on one occasion that perhaps the Lord had a different idea about my future and my life. I must tell you that at that time, the only alternative that seemed logical if one did not marry as a woman would be to enter a religious community, and I actually explored that. I visited any number of communities, but again, it did not seem to me that that life was the life that God wanted of me. At that time, and I'll just close this opening remark with that, we did not pray for vocations to the single life. It was not even right. thought of as a vocation, the single life of Jesus in the world, walking in the footsteps of Jesus, who was and remained a single person. We prayed for vocations, of course, to the religious life, to marriage and family. So I must say that it was a time of some struggle and some ambiguity to understand that as a potential calling.
Yeah, you point out that if a woman was not married, people wondered why, and there were various stereotypes that were hard to shake. And I remember the term old maid. Are you going to become an old maid? Get married was very,
well, absolutely.
Very popular.
I mean, those labels were just flung out, and I have to smile because I came from a group of women, not only my mother, but my aunts, who outrivaled just about anyone you would have ever met in the matchmaking department. And the only alternative to not being matched was to be an old maid, or if you were a man, to be a wrinkled up old bachelor. Yes. So it wasn't terribly easy to think about being a single person in the world. And actually, I sought some spiritual direction, and, you know, God bless the priest that I went to. He was a dear person, and I really know he had a lovely life of prayer and so on. But as I was puzzling with him this question, I remember him saying to me, my dear, the Lord has placed upon you the cross of the single life. Try to live it with joy. And I just put my eyes to the ground, and I remember saying to myself, surely there must be something right. to this life more than just bearing the cross. And I tell you that because that's why I ended up writing the book Celebrating the Single Life, A Spirituality for Single Persons in Today's World. Not that the cross isn't there, but honestly, it was put in negative terms. It was not a vocation in itself. It was a not, as in not being married and not being a woman religious.
Right. Of course, it wasn't that you didn't like men. But as we look back on our life, we realize that God had a plan despite some of our stronger feelings. And that was the experience in my own life. Each of us was created with love for a purpose, you write. And you believe that life is something of a mystery from beginning to end, don't you?
Well, I certainly do, and I have to really get on my knees and thank the Lord for bringing me into a colleagueship and a deep spiritual friendship with Father Adrian von Kalm. Perhaps it was because of his European background and his work with a wonderful single woman after the Second World War, Dr. Maria Schoenauer. She was the founder of the Dutch Life Schools for Young Adults, with which Adrian became involved in as a spiritual guide and a teacher of spiritual formation to young people, roughly between 18 and 24, who were so lost after the devastation of the war and the destruction of their cities and their families. But he had a tremendous respect for the single life because of the work of Dr. Schoenauer. And so when I was brought into that providential encounter with Father Adrian, then I also, just by God's holy providence, was in the presence of a person who not only respected Christian womanhood and the contribution of women to the church, but also respected and understood the vocation to the single life. So that encounter certainly encouraged me, and he really was all enthusiastic about my writing that book, Celebrating the Single Life.
And at the beginning, of course, the interview with you was also with him. The two of you were most were together most of the time in the interviews I did. You write in this chapter, I knew in my heart to which the mystery was making its claim that nothing would be more demeaning than forfeiting my vocation by succumbing to the dire prediction that I would never get over the misery of being unmarried and not having children. And a little later, I discovered that my life's call would be to teach the ancient, medieval, and modern classics that comprise the 2,000-year treasury of the literature of spirituality. From that point to the present, the Epiphany Academy of Formative Spirituality continues to serve the always ongoing, in-depth formation needs of laity, clergy, and religious in a variety of faith groupings throughout the United States and around the world. And the thing about this is that you worked in the fields of journalism and also public relations while earning a master's and a doctoral degrees in English literature. And in some way that was preparing you for what was to be, as we look back, as I look at my own life in terms of public relations. And I'm just carrying on a little bit here, a couple more things, because we're going to take a break. But 1996 was a seismic shift for you, as it was for me. Mine was, I was ordained as a priest, not having expected to be that just months earlier. So it happened to me that same year. I selected priesthood instead of possible marriage. And you meet Father Adrian von Kalm, who becomes a colleague, mentor, and spiritual guide who deeply influenced your life. And then he invites you to join him in the establishment of what we've been talking about, a graduate of formative spirituality. And that's what you're doing with your life today, isn't it? We just have 30 seconds before we take a break.
30 seconds will be enough to say that tomorrow, October 26, 1966, was the day that changed my life.
Oh, my.
I not only said yes to Father Adrian, but I know I said yes to the mystery of God's holy providence.
Wow. So
we are on the eve of that anniversary.
Well, congratulations. It's there are things that we need to celebrate. Because there's always something new that can be learned in the process or renewed. So we're going to take this break, and we'll be back to talk with Dr. Susan Muto. Welcome back to Amplify, where our guest this evening is Dr. Susan Muto. She's written a chapter in a book called Sex and the Spiritual Life. Her topic is sexuality, spirituality, and the single life. We talked about the calling that she felt in her own life by being haunted by the desire to identify with Jesus, who remained a single person and felt that she would feel abandoned by God if she didn't abandon herself to God. And somehow I would hope that's true of all of us. But there is a priest who she goes to and talks to, and he says that Susan should bear the cross of her singleness for Jesus. But Father Adrian had a different response, didn't he? Talking about the phenomenon of the abandonment of the soul that he believed affects everyone at some time in their life.
Yes, that was a marvelous insight that Father Adrian shared. As a matter of fact, I'd like to read from page 72 of this book, Sex and the Spiritual Life, in my chapter, because it really is about a very important theme of reclaiming integrity and wholeness in intimacy. And there I say, my service of love as a single person might have been to those abandoned bodily, like the hungry and the homeless, but I had a strong sense that God wanted me to tend to those abandoned in soul. If I had discovered the truth that no amount of worldly success could fill the inner emptiness I felt, might not others feel the same? Father Adrian reminded me that the phenomena of abandonment of soul affects everyone at some time in their life. My situation as willed by God was not single by circumstance, as in widowhood, or single in transition to marriage, but to be single by choice and to live this vocation in obedience to the teachings of the Church. I would feel abandoned by God if I did not abandon myself to God in my fully feminine sexuality and fully lived spirituality. As always, it was that holistic vision of Father Adrian's, fully human, fully spiritual. He loved the phrase from the great church father, St. Irenaeus, the glory of God is the human person fully alive. Of course, there are crosses that everyone has to bear. You as a priest, every married couple has crosses to bear. We singles have to bear crosses. But to really understand that behind that is the celebration that out of the cross comes new life and new meaning. And Father Adrian always pointed to that horizon of meaning, and it gave me such confidence that it was possible to be mm-hmm. single by choice, and that that was a beautiful vocation blessed by the Church.
You certainly speak of your spirituality as being joyful. And why is it important for singles to show how and why sexual expression means much more than merely having sex, but rather it is to say no to irresponsible sexual encounters and yes to the art and discipline of loving others with the self-giving love with which God has loved us? So tell us about the self-giving love with which we have been loved by God.
Well, you know from reading this chapter that I've been very touched by the wisdom of St. John Paul II, who writes in Familiaris Consortia, one of his wonderful encyclicals, love is the fundamental and innate vocation of every human being. It is inevitably a demeaning of the whole person, that temple that you so beautifully articulated, to sever sexuality from spirituality, to make it only an it, as in a genital pleasuring that has been removed from the whole truth that our human sexuality is a pointer to a way in which we express the love and the warmth that we have for one another because of the way Jesus loves us. Now, that expression can be in the priesthood, in the religious life, in the married life, and also in the single life. And I think that the Church has always given us great guidance in that regard, that sexuality is not about it. I remember how sad I felt when people would brag about doing it. Sexuality is a thou relationship, and it's a thou relationship with God and with other people. Whether that relationship is celebrated in marriage or whether it is celebrated in a more chaste and respectful way in the single life. But it's all about loving. And the problem with severing that notion of love from its whole pointer to the spiritual life and just thinking of it as some kind of quick experience of pleasure really makes for great sadness. In a way, that's the cross that mm-hmm. many people put upon themselves, not a cross that our Lord wants, but a formula for unhappiness.
You write that before we choose any vocation, married or religious, we are one-of-a-kind human being. And that means that we've been called by God before we've come into existence. And so we need to understand how special we are, and that human sexuality shouldn't ever be reduced to mere physical genitality, that we are more than our sexual drives for pleasure, that God has a plan for us. And having Christ at the center of our life, of our love life, entails refusing to treat anyone as an object of sexual gratification. What then is the sacred dimension of our sacred feelings?
We must recover in our era a foundational truth given to us by great spiritual writers, from Augustine to Thomas Aquinas, certainly to Father Adrian von Kalm, and that is the truth that our essence in God precedes our existence in time. Before we even came to be, we already were in the mind and heart of God. This is the essence precedes existence truth of our faith. It has been horribly twisted in our era, especially by atheistic existentialism founded by Jean-Paul Sartre and Simone de Beauvoir, that existence precedes essence. The minute you say that, then I make or break myself. There is no God. I am the center of everything. But when, in fact, we go to the truth that essence precedes existence, then we know that we are so much more than an object. We are a deep and loving subject in God's eyes. And to objectify sexual pleasure as an end in itself without really any consequences of loving is simply demeaning our human condition and reversing the truth that our essence in God precedes our existence. So that essence existence structure, which certainly St. John Paul II would have witnessed to, is so very important in understanding, I guess, the underlying theme of this book: reclaiming integrity, reclaiming wholeness, reclaiming the truth of intimacy, that intimacy is so much more than self-aggrandizement in the sexual realm.
Yes, you bring up Pope St. John Paul II, whose feast day was just a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. And you write in the book about how he touched your heart when he visited the United States and said, "Today I propose to you the option of love, which is the opposite of escape. If you really accept that love from Christ, it will lead you to God." You've written 40 books, or co-authored them with Father Adrian von Kalm, and all of them in some way touch upon the spiritual life, saying that we need to make Christ the center of all we say and do.
Well, we have, with God's gracious help, really produced a body of work second to none in the field of formative spirituality. Actually, it's 40 books of my own and at least another 40 co-authored with Father Adrian. If we put it all together, we probably produced about 100 volumes in the field of formative spirituality. And I want to say, without a doubt, that God knew what God was about, because the single vocation that he granted me, the grace of living, has given me the freedom that I need to do this work, to foster this mission and ministry for the sake of the people of God and to really serve the church. Single life has enabled me to have that freedom from the responsibility of marriage and children, to honestly become spiritually generative. I've always felt that spiritual motherhood is a marvelous part of the single vocation. And honestly, each and every book I or we together wrote, we felt that it was generating new life for people who would read it, that perhaps something in the text would touch them and change them and indeed bring them closer to Christ. So it's all, when I look back on it, especially in light of tomorrow being the anniversary of a yes that I've yes. never taken back, a yes that has been the core of fidelity, that there is a wonderfully generative experience of this writing and this ministry that I believe I received the call to the single life for this reason, and I think that bringing up my background in literature and journalism, this vocation has given me such a great amount of time to do the kind of research and writing that went into reclaiming that ancient, medieval, and modern treasury of our 2,000-year faith tradition.
Yeah, I don't have a date in terms of my giving myself to God or believing that God was calling me to a particular way of living, but mine was more a place, mm-hmm. the exact seat, and I know the general month and the year, but yes, there are moments that are burned into our heart and our soul. And we live in a world, however, where the forces of fueling sexual revolution give Christians no choice but to be countercultural, is what you're telling us.
Thank you for saying that, because I feel that being countercultural is an essential yes to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Jesus had the courage to go counter to so much that was in the culture in which he was raised, in which he grew up. He had to go counter to assumptions that mere worldly human power was what it was all about. He had to show us the great paradoxes of the powerlessness of the cross, the self-gift of loving the neighbor. So the point is, we have to have courage right now, more than anything else. Father Adrian's reminder to me, I probably said it 1,000 times during his life and during our colleagueship, Susan, keep courage, because without courage, our hearts shrink. And we do not have the wherewithal to stand up and declare that certain assumptions in the culture are flat out contrary to God's way with us. And we are living in a time when the confusion around sexuality, gender identity, the reasons for procreative and responsible love pretty much can go down the drain, the destruction of family life. All of this is completely contrary to, quite frankly, what gives us human beings a chance for joy and happiness. And the more we try to make ourselves instead of saying yes to our Maker, the more unhappy we become. But we need the courage to be countercultural, quite frankly, more than ever right now.
And it was one of his books when I was in seminary for theology that really got me thinking seriously, more seriously about my vocation. And there is some sense in which I attribute my ordination to him. How can selfish sexual gratification affect us?
Well, you know, think again about objectifying a momentary flare-up of pleasure and thinking that it can really satisfy us. This is the core of so much abuse. It's the core of really using another human being, young or old, as simply an object. An object of my pleasure. That person is no longer a subject made in the image and likeness of God to be infinitely respected and cared for. So the separation of genitality from the fullness of a sexual spiritual life. It's almost like a new form of dualism, and it's very radically harmful. It belies the sense that of the wholeness of our human personhood, body, mind, and spirit, and that we are created in the form and image of God. It's really being shattered, that truth. Male and female, God created them in God's own form and likeness were they made. And, you know, the reduction of the human person to mere biology is really wrong and a formula, I believe, for ultimate unhappiness.
Who are some of the best role models in this struggle against sexual gratification that you were just describing?
Well, I think that's where I've been privileged to recover the literature of spirituality. For example, in A Feast for Hungry Souls, when I studied the lives of what I call great heroes and heroines of the faith, like, for example, someone like St. Therese of Lisieux in the Catholic faith, or a wonderful man like Dietrich Bonhoeffer in the Lutheran faith, and the delicate and beautiful love that he had for his fiancée. They were never able to be married because of the treachery of his being captured and ultimately executed by the Nazi Gestapo. But we need to turn to heroes and heroines who have lived a chaste, a celibate life, who have contributed in incredibly creative ways to the goodness of human beings. And I must say, you know, women like the doctors of the church, the four of them now, Teresa of Avila, Catherine of Siena, Therese of Lisieux, Hildegard of Bingen, all of these women were very much witnesses to me of how a person could really live the life. Catherine of Siena was particularly important, not only because of my parish, but she really remained a laywoman, essentially. She linked up at one point with a kind of third-order Dominican group, but Catherine was really witnessing to, I think, the single life in the world, and look at how the Lord brought her into the forefront of even resolving the papal schism in Avignon. So I've answered a long answer to a short question, but you have to find role models that really live the faith courageously and witness to the truth in our time and in all times.
And let me read from the book in which you have contributed a chapter. Inspired by the spiritual mothers we loved, among them Teresa of Avila, Catherine of Siena, and Julian of Norwich, we agreed that celibacy was not a curtailment of our freedom, but a catapult of sexual, spiritual energy that released us to live other-oriented lives, sustained by prayer and the presence of to the Lord. Our times together prove that one of the chief factors facilitating spiritual integrity for all followers of Christ is spiritual friendship. Soulmates, male or female, share the conviction that their best friend is Jesus of Nazareth, who lived the loving, self-giving celibate life they want to celebrate in one another's company. They thank God. We're going to take this break. We'll be back.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Once upon a mundane morning, Barb's day got busy without warning. A realtor in need of an open house sign? No, 50 of them, and designed before 9.
My head hurts.
Any mighty tools to help with this plight?
Aha!
Barb made her move. She opened Canva and got in the groove.
Bulk creating Canva sheets. Create 50 signs fit for suburban streets.
Done in a click, all complete.
Sweet!
Now, imagine what your dreams can become when you put imagination to work at Canva.com.
Did you know your credit card points and miles can lose value to inflation? Credit card companies often reduce the redemption value of your points and miles. Now, imagine a credit card with rewards that can grow in value. With the Gemini credit card, you can earn Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos instantly with no annual fee. Every swipe at the store or gas pump earns you instant rewards deposited straight to your account. Plus, sign up now for a $200 Bitcoin bonus to kickstart your rewards. Visit Gemini.com/card today. Check out the link in the description for more information on rates and fees. Again, if you're looking to invest in Bitcoin but don't know where to start, the Gemini credit card makes it easy.
The Gemini credit card is issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other cost information, see rates and fees. The Gemini credit card may not be used to make gambling-related purchases.